Welcome to Double X Science. It's in your genes. Today is Friday, March 29th, 2013. I am Adrian Rorick, chemistry editor, and with me today is Chris Gunter, education editor at Double X Science. Good morning, Chris.
Hi, Adrian, and everybody.
I believe this is the first week our listeners get to hear you on the podcast. Could you tell us about yourself?
Hi, y'all. I have to say that because I'm in Atlanta. I am a human geneticist by training. I've spent time in science publishing and as the director of research for a nonprofit in biotechnology. And now I'm taking a few months off to do consulting in science communication. And I understand, Adrian, that you have a new job starting soon.
I do. On Monday, I will be transitioning from being a postdoctoral researcher to being an associate manager of an NMR facility, wherein I will be doing a lot of maintenance and setup of NMR spectrometers, which are really big, expensive machines that are really fun to play with. And and I will be helping users use those spectrometers. So that's a lot of fun. I like teaching, and so I'll get to do a lot of one-on-one. I'll get to do trainings on group trainings and then one-on-one stuff. And then I also get to continue a little bit of my own research. So I'm pretty excited about all of that.
Yeah, that's great. Good luck.
Thank you. Now on to our week of posts. This week we had 5 posts, and the week did start off promoting our podcasts, and you can go to that and take a look at all the old podcasts if you like. However, I hope you've been listening along, and if you check the iTunes feed or your favorite podcatcher feed, you should have all our previous posts. On Tuesday, our editor-in-chief, Emily Willingham, gave us Women Know Something You Don't. And this post pretty much goes over the history of birth control that women have had in their purview going back to ancient times, and that in times of stress, such as World War II, even without birth control, which the birth control pill only began in the 1950s, without that reliable medical birth control, women had methods to keep the birth rate low, and birth rate actually dropped by 15% in this really stressful time. So it's a sort of an overview of a lot of history. It's very interesting to read, and it does have some political assertions in it, so it's something to keep in mind.
Yeah, I liked it. Okay, on Wednesday, one of our Double X Science contributors, Jessica Wright, wrote a post called After Newtown Missteps, Journalists Get Guidelines. So I found this really interesting. After the Newtown shootings, of course, in an elementary school, it was reported that the shooter may or may not have autism or other mental illnesses. And so I like the quote that Jessica put in her piece, which was, "Behavior that seems impossible to comprehend like that makes us want to distance ourselves from those who do it, and there's no better way to create that distance than by using a label that says, quote, that's not me, unquote." So, and she says, in this case, autistic people found themselves in the absurd position of having to defend the fact that they are no more likely to commit mass murder than anyone else, which is true. When we're all trying to process these horrible things, there's a lot of false leads and maybe some misreporting that goes on. So her blog post talks about the common sense assertion that writers shouldn't diagnose individuals with a mental illness based entirely on speculation, which seems obvious, is actually now part of a new recommendation that's been added to the AP style book for journalists, and that was announced March 7th. So if you are interested at all in reporting, then that seems like something that you should take a look at.
Yep, definitely. And I did find it super interesting. And I actually, when I shared it out, had a lot of people who were like, yay, because they were sick of that. Armchair diagnoses that go on anytime anything like that happens.
Yeah, exactly.
On Wednesday, we got a second post from our editor-in-chief, Emily Willingham, called SCOTUS Justices Can't Find Science on Same-Sex Marriage. So we found it for them. And this post has also been very popular on the site. There's a lot of promotion of marriage equality going around on social media. There was a lot of disappointment in some recent SCOTUS rulings. And so Emily went ahead and found
a statement from the American Academy of Pediatrics, which went into what's good for children, as she says, has nothing to do with the sex or gender of the parents.
Right. There we go. She covers a little bit about the actual science, so we can see the actual data and discusses the conclusion and whatnot, and references everyone back to that statement. The statement appeared on March 20th, so it was before the Supreme Court heard the arguments, so they could have found it. It's out there and able for people to take a look at.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, obviously everyone has seen probably on their Facebook and Twitter a lot of people's avatars being changed, so there's a lot of interest in this. So this would be a great one to read if you want to have some science to back up people who might not agree if you feel that same-sex marriage should be legalized. Yep. And then on Friday, we continued our I Am Mental Illness series. If you haven't been reading those, you've really got to check these out. These are really brave people who have agreed to share what they've gone through in dealing with their mental illness with us and the readers of XX Science. So, and this one is about avoidant personality disorder by Emma Atkinson, who's a psychology student in Atlanta, where I am. She talks about how difficult it is. She is unable to even have casual conversations with other people because her fear of rejection by them is so great that she just can't even talk to them. So she ends up retreating into her own world, and she says in there that avoidant personality disorder is characterized by feelings of extreme social inhibition and sensitivity to rejection. And she read somewhere that people with her diagnosis are said to lack empathy, but she's able to tell us through the blog post that she doesn't feel that way at all. She loves people very deeply. It's just that she just is not able to have a casual conversation with them and interact with them. It's all kind of behavioral and pharmaceutical therapies have not been helpful for her. And I had no idea that about 1% of the general population has avoidant personality disorder, according to WebMD. So again, this is just a really, I learned a lot from this post, and I would strongly encourage people to read it.
I agree. And the 1% number, it might be that people, again, are undiagnosed because, like she says in her first experience with a therapist, they laughed it off, her fear.
Right.
And right. It's hard to know when something is, I have troubles making small talk, to when it becomes a problem is when it's actually in hindering your ability to function in social, professional, and familial situations. And so I think she has a really interesting conclusion too, where she discusses how much you need to balance what needs to be corrected for functionality and what you should just say, this is me, and accept. So,
And that's a common theme with many of our I Am Mental Illness posts as well, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you can find all those posts at our website, xxscience.org, by clicking on the links to the post title on the main page. In addition, our sister site, XX Science Junior, had 2 posts this week. Tuesday was Warmer Mountaintops, and Thursday was Dolphins of the Sea. Both of these were by our future science leaders, bloggers that are participating in the program at Science World in Vancouver, BC. The Warmer Mountaintops post was about a student who learned a fact in her school book that as you go higher in altitude, the air gets colder. But when she went on a ski trip, the air got warmer. And so she investigated why this little factoid that should always be true wasn't really true. And it's because there are more factors than just altitude, which is actually really a pressure issue, and temperature. In that in the atmosphere, you have other issues that are going to make not just the climate altitude affect your pressure, but things like clouds and other, I'm not a climatologist or a weather person, but just other factors that then make it that as she went up the mountain, it actually got warmer. So she explored that and found it interesting.
Cool.
And
gotta do the experiment, right?
Yep, gotta do the experiment. So She did that. She has some pictures to show what the issue was. It's kind of fun. We are also looking for contributors to our XX Science Junior site. This is a site written by students for students on science topics of whatever interest. So you can contact me via the XX Science site on the About Us page or the contributors page. I am Adrienne Rorick. I look forward to hearing from you. And you can find these posts at xxsciencejr.blogspot.com or by following the link from xxscience.org's main page. And now, on to our news. Chris, what science have you been reading this week?
friends of mine who work at Nature put out a special issue this week looking at transformations in science publishing. If people are interested in looking at it, it's nature.com/sci publishing, SCI publishing, and it's all open. So you should be able to read all of it. They have a number of news features talking about, in science publishing, there's a lot of debate still about open access and how who should be able to get access to which articles and how much should be paid and how that can be financially viable, etc. So they have quite a number of pieces commenting on different aspects of this, including the fact that there are some con artists out there stealing the identities of real journals to cheat scientists out of publishing fees and then never actually publishing their work. And then they have a really interesting graph that shows about attempting to quantify the value that publishers add for the money that people pay to publish their papers open access. So I'm kind of a geek for that stuff. I found it fascinating. But there was also a really interesting Q&A with a man named Robert Darnton, who heads the Harvard University Library System. So he talks about, you know, this is the world's largest collection of academic publications. So if you're a library geek, this should be great. He talks also about a new initiative coming out in a few weeks called the Digital Public Library of America, where Harvard and other places have digitized very rare manuscripts and other items they have, and those will be available in a few weeks online. So it's pretty cool. What about you? What have you been reading?
A lot of people have been hearing about this story, it's that honeybees can't do it alone. That basically, for food crops, there's a lot of reliance upon the honeybee population to do the pollination. Food crops need pollination to grow. What was found in a 28th of February paper by Burke, and this was published in Science, so, and this is unfortunately not open access, but you can at least take a look at the abstract, and this was called Plant Pollinator Interactions Over 120 Years, Loss of Species, Co-occurrence, and Function. And here they're talking about the fact that for crop management, for food production, you do need pollinators, and there is a heavy reliance on honeybee populations, but unfortunately they aren't stacking up, and in addition, honeybee populations are being decimated for other reasons that are unknown. This is looking at, since the late 1800s, the insects that are pollinating plants and which plants and pollinators are interacting with each other. And then they revisited these same sites that this man, Charles Robinson in Illinois, had collected data on in the 1800s. They revisited these sites in the 70s and again in 2009 and 2010 to collect similar plant pollinator data. And it found that the pollinator function has declined through time, and bees are showing less visitation rates and lower fidelity to individual plant species. So certain insects like to pollinate certain plant species. Yeah, it's interesting work. It definitely has a lot of, you know, there's interest to, say, entomologists and people who study insects and people who study plants as well, though. Botanists, probably, and agricultural scientists. This has a lot of effect on many areas of science. This is quite a cross-contributing thing. So very interesting, and of course I think any consumer would be interested because this is going to affect our food supply. That wraps up our week at XX Science.
And next week we can expect a post about that microscopy that Jeff Perkel discussed on last week's podcast. Some posts from contributors, including a woman who I think must be related to me in some way, Jen Gunter. If you don't follow her on Twitter, you should. She's a lot of fun. She'll talk about robotic hysterectomies and the evidence behind whether or not they are more effective or less. We, of course, will have another I Am Mental Illness series post on Friday. That's when we have them. We'll have another post about what a heartbeat is, and then a post, of course, because it's XX Science, looking at vaginas from a different angle.
All right, so lots of interesting science next week. Thank you for listening. Please subscribe to our podcast via iTunes or your favorite podcatcher. If you are enjoying the podcast, please leave us a review or a 5-star rating at iTunes to help bring science to more people. Our music is provided by Editor-in-Chief Emily Willingham. Our artwork is by Dallas Lopez. Please like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at XXSci. This has been Chemistry Editor Adrian Rorick and Education Editor Chris Gunter. We are XX Science, bringing science to the woman in you.